The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Expert advice to keep the whole family healthy at All Care, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.
Good afternoon on this Monday afternoon. How are you? If you want to contact the programme, as usual, 51551 for text. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. A lovely day in Dublin yesterday. We got the Lewis in and then we walked around the quarter or street, whatever you want to call it. It was Grafton Street. And it was just a lovely atmosphere. It was cold, but it was bright and it was dry and everybody was in good spirits. Loads of buskers up and down Grafton Street and all doing brilliantly. There seems to be a lot more young girls or young women busking on Grafton Street, which is great to see. And then we went around to Music Maker and bought a harmonica for the seven-year-old. You never know. You just never know. It was a 16-euro investment in the future. He could be a prodigy when it comes to harmonica playing. Before you know it, he's selling albums all over the world, getting streamed and downloaded. I can retire. While we were in there, your man says, you should go downstairs. All the drum kits are downstairs. So we went down. Now, here's the thing. They should introduce this into therapy. They have these electronic drum kits and you put the headphones on and you can batter it away and you're not bothering anybody. And I was there for 10 minutes. Tom was going, pulling at me, Daddy, can we go? And we did. We went to the dead zoo. And the good news or bad news, depending on what way you look at it, they're all still dead. All of them, yes. The giraffe and the elephant and the peregrine falcon and the chimpanzee. They're all still dead in the dead zoo. Huge number of people in there yesterday. Of course, it's free of charge, FOC. But with all the stuffed animals inside, I think the most fun to be had was outside. Because with autumn and the leaves falling, there was just loads. There was just a sea of leaves outside the dead zoo. And everybody had gathered there to try and get that photo. So they were encouraging their 4, 5, 6, 7-year-olds to get a bunch of leaves in their hands and throw them up. And they were trying to capture that moment where the leaves came raining down. And of course, me being sheepish, I followed the flock and tried to do it. Failed miserably. There's loads of pictures of Tom with a bunch of leaves in his hands. And there's one with one leaf, a straggler coming down. But none, they just didn't get the effect. I'm sure loads of people did. And then I was off home on a packed Lewis. So a lovely day in Dublin City. Thanks, Dublin City, for that. How was your weekend? Let us know. 51551ray@rte.ie. We had Dr. Harry Barry on the telly on Saturday, and it was a State of the Nation speech he gave. It was his manifesto about mobile phones and social media. And you've heard an awful lot of that from loads of different people. But what I liked about Dr. Harry Barry was he's been at the coalface. He was a GP for years and now he's touring around the country talking to students and parents. So he knows what he's talking about. And there was some very sound advice, like don't give a smartphone to a child under 13. And come 10 o'clock or 10:30 at night, everybody puts their mobile phones into a basket and they remain there until morning time. Because he was saying, and this seemed to have struck an awful lot of people there on the night because they came up and said it to me afterwards, that a lot of the cyberbullying and a lot of the bullying takes place overnight. So you think your child has gone up to bed and they're safe, cuddled up, safe at home in their own bed. Couldn't be anywhere safer. But no, the pings are going in and the bullying continues. And that was scary for parents who were listening to Harry Barry. You can watch it back on the player. And I see Hannah Gadsby was in the Bord Gáis Energy Theatre last night. And Anna Carey was tweeting that everybody had to put their phone, not in a basket, but in a little pouch. We've heard about this before at gigs. It's a really good idea because there's a lot of people videoing gigs and taking photographs and all that sort of thing. So Anna Gadsby, the Australian comedian, her people insisted that you put your mobile phone into a little pouch. It got unlocked at the end of the show and people weren't allowed to take photographs or record or whatever. And Anna says that it removed the option of taking a pic. So that's what if we have the phone, we're going to do it, aren't we? But if we don't have the phone, we won't do it. We don't interfere with anybody else's enjoyment of the gig. Didn't she record a Netflix thing talking about the fact that she was giving up stand-up comedy? I think it was so popular then that she continued it. So, yeah, which is odd. There you go. You don't know what's going to happen in life, do you? Did you watch the Prince Andrew interview. I watched it today, and I was reading the various quotes over the weekend and looking at people's reaction. Unbecoming, he said, of Epstein's behaviour. And Emily Matless pointed out that, well, it was more than unbecoming. And one of the quotes he said was, "I have a tendency to be too honourable." What fascinated me was looking at this man who's eighth in line to the throne. And it got me thinking about the monarchy. And why is there a monarchy in 2019, nearly 2020? I know, nothing to do with us because we're a republic and it's just across the water there. But like, he's there because of an accident of birth. He hasn't done anything to earn it. Like, if it was a meritocracy as opposed to monarchy, I don't know what he'd be doing. And then I started to feel sorry for the poor man because it is an accident of birth, and there he is, and the weight of all this thing on his shoulders. I'm not, And then you start asking the questions, is he telling the truth? And you're reading the body language. And then he was coughing at one stage, and I said, is that a sign that he's telling lies? And maybe he is that gormless that he was in the company of this man and he noticed nothing, or maybe. And then you're saying, well, there's the photograph. And he's saying, well, I don't remember that photograph. And he's suggesting that it could have been photoshopped. And then you don't know. And I suppose what everybody was saying, by the end of it, there's more questions than answers. But his assessment of it, according to the papers just about an hour ago, seemingly he was overheard talking to his mother, Queen Elizabeth II. And he said it was a great success. A great success. So there. Who knows? Who knows? Do you remember this day 10 years ago? I still feel upset just thinking about it. It was that handball by Thierry Henry. And he prevented us. Well, we don't know what way the match would have panned out if the referee blew his whistle and gave us a free out. We still had a bit of work to do, but we could have qualified for the World Cup in that year. But no, we didn't. And Thierry Henry, of course, admitted to the handball after the match. But the next day, I remember the next day, we were on to all sorts of, we were on the radio, we were ringing up the international footballing body and demanding justice, demanding fair play. And it was like a nation we're hard done by. It was unjust, it wasn't fair. And we thought, we actually thought for 24 to 48 hours after that happened, that we would, something would happen, that the match would be replayed, that the referee would see sense and change his decision. Of course, that didn't happen. What happened? Well, there was some money exchanged hands and we were asked to keep our mouths shut about the whole thing. Anyway, 10 years on, Thierry Henry, what would you say to him if you met him in a pub? What would you say to Thierry Henry? I'm sure he's heard it all at this stage. I'm sure he's heard it all. 5-on-5-5-1, RadRTE.ie. Of course, tonight, a big game against Denmark. If we win it, we're straight to the European Championships. If we draw or lose, I think we're into a playoff situation. But it's a big game. And I noticed a lot of Danish fans around town yesterday. And they fit it in because it's red and white. And red and white are the colours of Christmas. So it was, that added to the atmosphere in town. So we welcome all our Danish fans. I doubt very much that they're listening to the radio. But they may be. You never know. 5-on-5-5-1. Or you can get us at ray@rte.ie. Good afternoon. There you go. The XX and Islands on Radio 1. 5-on-5-5-1, ray@rte.ie. Is the dead zoo near Leinster House? It is. Around the back of it. How apt, says that person. And on Thierry Henry's handball, it saved the fans a fortune. And Tom says, best thing ever happened. He did us a favour. We should say thanks. That's Tom. So if Tom met Thierry Henry, he'd say, thank you very much. Merci beaucoup. We've the Hairy Bikers on today. They're always good company. Always a bit of a laugh. That's after 4 o'clock. David Gillick's coming in to talk to us. And Gillian McNulty has some great news. And we talk to her after this.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Or our text number is 51551 for anything on your mind this Monday afternoon. Now, last year on the show, cystic fibrosis sufferer and campaigner Gillian McNulty was talking to us. And at the end of the interview, we started talking about how her kidneys were suffering because of her condition. And she was saying that she may need a kidney in the future. And unknowns to me or anybody else on the team, she put out a call. She said, if there's anybody out there who would like to give me a kidney, please contact me. And the most amazing thing happened. 7 people offered Gillian one of their kidneys. Complete strangers. And we've been on and off to Gillian over the last year or so, and she's been mentioning names and stuff like that. She's back on the line now. Hello, Gillian.
Good afternoon. How are you, Rick?
Good to talk to you.
Thank you.
And for the first time, I can say hello to Sean. Hello, Sean.
Hello, Ray. How are things?
And you're one of the seven people who offered Gillian a kidney.
That's right, yeah.
Right. Lovely to talk to you.
You too.
Yeah. Talk us through what happened.
Well, I suppose at the start, I was driving along one day and I just heard first day Gillian was on the radio. And I didn't hear the full story. I wasn't even listening to it properly, as it was.
Mm.
And just kind of got the gist of the story and thought not more of it. Went away about my business the rest of the day and the rest of the night. And I don't know, was it the following day or a couple of days later, I was listening to the show again. And it was mentioned that someone was after contacting the show that evening after the show to offer the kidney. And it was, well, it was then when it just triggered with me that, oh, anyone can donate a kidney if they wish. Like, just kind of, something I never thought of before. And then it just got into my head and I started thinking more and more about it. And I checked up a few things myself online and Googled a few things and just caught my imagination straight away. And then I said I'd contact the show.
Yeah.
So I sent an email to you there, just giving a rough idea of my name and my age and my health status and that. And I just said, I didn't know if I would be able to or suitable, but I said I'd be prepared to go on the list or do whatever it was take to see if I could help out the
girl
on the radio.
Sean, when you went and you Googled it, what did you discover?
Well, when I say I Googled, I knew a few people before around my own area that would have had transplants and they were fine afterwards. And so I was only kind of Googling basically what the donor would have to do or who would be able suitable to go forward or who wouldn't be suitable or just things like that. Because as I said, it was something that I never ever thought of before. Not that I never said I'd never do it. I never said I would do it. It's something that I never thought of.
But why would you think about it, in fairness?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just something that rang a bell and I didn't know enough about it myself then to actually say that I would try and help because I didn't want to be giving the person, Gillian, false hope. I didn't know who could or who couldn't. I just had no idea of it, really.
Yeah.
But when I read up on it then and I realised, you know, I could maybe help someone here, I said I'd make contact and see what could happen at that stage.
It's an amazingly selfless thing to do, to give somebody else who you don't know that well one of your kidneys.
Well, I haven't.
No, you haven't done it yet. But
it hasn't happened yet.
No, you've offered it up, though.
I wasn't. You know, I just like to think if I was ever in that situation, that someone would. And I'm not trying to preach to anyone, I just can't. The more I read up it, and the more I thought of it, I actually can't believe that more of it isn't done.
Mm.
You know, and I know that doesn't. I'm not telling people that they should be doing it, but I just think people like me, 2 years ago, I wouldn't have had a clue what it entailed or anything. And I just think if people did realise that there's people out there struggling so badly with health, that people could make a massive difference
to them,
to those people. Yeah. But as I said, it's just people don't know enough about it. I still don't know enough about it, but I know enough to know that I want to.
You want to do it, Gillian, so as seven people offered their kidneys, and of course it needs to be a match. The person needs to be a match, don't they?
Yeah, they have to be a blood match and then tissue match, antibody match. It's very complex. At the moment, we know Sean is a blood match, and I'm hoping that he'll be a tissue match and an antibody match and the whole lot. I'm hoping, but we have to wait for another couple of weeks yet.
Yeah, and the reason we're having you on now is because this Friday is a big day. What's happening on Friday?
Yeah, it's a big day. I meet the anaesthetist in Beaumont, and it's ultimately then that decide whether I'm fit for the surgery or whether I'll be listed on the pool or not.
Okay.
So it's a big day. I'm hoping that I will. I think I'll be fine because my CF is stable, so there shouldn't be any problems. But please God, Friday. Friday afternoon, I'll be told that I've been listed for kidney transplant.
So does that terrible catch 22 where you have to be sick enough to need a kidney, but not too sick that you can't undergo surgery?
Yeah, it's quite complex, especially with me with my CF.
Right, go on.
You know, I'm the first patient in Ireland with CF to end up on dialysis. And to go forward for the kidney transplant, so it's very complex. And obviously my lungs have to be well enough to go through with the surgery. So we're hoping that I'll get priority while I am well to do the kidney, and it'll work out best for me if Sean is a match, that we can then plan when we do it. Because obviously that's better for me, because, you know, if I go on the pool and I receive a call in the middle of the night and I'm not well, then obviously I can't go ahead with the surgery. So we're hoping that it'll just work out, that Sean will be the match and that I can get the kidney pretty quick. It'll still be a good few months. It'll be next year before I can get it, but that I can get it pretty quick when I am well and then begin to recover properly.
So what's the sequence of events now? So you meet your anaesthetist and he says you're well enough to have surgery. And then what does Sean have to do then?
So I have to step back then, because it's an altruistic donation. I have to step back. Sean then has to contact Beaumont, gives them his details, tells them he wants to donate a kidney, and then they take it from there. Sean is called in for tests, psychological tests. He needs to go through rigorous testing, and then within about 3-4 months they'll make the decision, or they'll be told whether we're a match or not. And then we plan the surgery.
Sean, how do you feel listening to Gillian there? Because it's getting real.
Yeah, well, I've been listening to that for the last couple of months. I don't mean listening to it. I've been listening to it because I've been asking the questions, because I was anxious to know myself, you know, because I remember when we made contact the first time, I thought it was a thing that might be done within 3 or 4 months from start to finish. I didn't really know much about it. So then Gillian contacted me to say that it could be a 2 or 3 year process at the time, and I remember at the time she was a bit anxious, because I had said at that stage I would like to give the kidney to someone anyway, if whether Gillian was a match or not. And I think she was a small bit worried then, in case, because it was going to be such a long process, that I might end up giving it to someone else in the meantime.
Yes.
So that's how little I knew about it at the time, but I said no, I was going to wait. So I have been asking a lot of questions in the last couple of months, so what she's saying there today isn't any
news to you.
Any news to me. I've been trying to keep up on it all the time and know as much about it as I can.
Have you spoken to anybody who's an altruistic kidney donor?
I haven't, no. Personally, no. I just know a few people that I've seen on television and that, but I haven't spoken to them directly, no.
Yeah. And of course, they have to check that your motives are right and that you'll be able to go through all of those things. It's a vigorous enough process. And you're up for it.
Whatever it takes, or whatever has to be done. As I said, I just left myself open to the process, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I didn't know it at the time, but I'm just, whatever I need to do,
You'll do it.
And if it can be done, it can be done, hopefully, and it can be of benefit to
Gillian. Well, of course it will be. A huge benefit, won't it, Gillian?
It's going to be life changing. You know, like, I am struggling, and I have been struggling for the last couple of months. Now it's slightly different because I started dialysis 3 weeks ago, and I'm kind of improving a little bit. But I've been quite sick, but I'm still not going to be myself until I get a new kidney. And obviously, it'll be a couple of weeks after that until I recover that I'll be back to normal. It's going to be a long road, but it'll be worth it.
People will be surprised to hear that you haven't met yet.
No, not yet. We were supposed to, and then something happened, and then we were supposed to, and something happened. But hopefully before Christmas, Sean.
I don't know. I say we're better off we don't, just in case I don't like you and I meet you and I change my mind. So.
Sorry. What if I look like you?
Very funny. Yeah, you'll have to keep your sense of humour, Sean. That's important throughout all of this. Gillian, you do sound like you're struggling to breathe there. So where is your lung function at the moment?
My lung function is fine.
Is it? Yeah.
Like my lung function is stable. It's 41%.
All right.
I've been stable. Okay. It's almost a year, which is incredible. It's coming on 11 months since I needed anything for my CF. So it's just Like, I'm really, really well. And that's down to Sinchevy. You know, if it wasn't for Sinchevy and Orkambi, I wouldn't be here. Like, let's be honest. And the change in Sinchevy has really done me the world of good. Considering how sick I've been with my kidney failure, my lungs and my CF, it's phenomenal. It's unreal how stable that I am.
Yeah. And there's more good news today, or was it over the weekend, there, that new drug that combines three different drugs?
Yes, Trikafta.
Yeah.
This is like the one we've all been waiting for. If Orkambi and Sinchevy have been good up to now, like, I've called them my miracle, because they are my miracle, because they've kept me alive. But honestly, Trikafta, Orkambi and Sinchevy are like Smarties in comparison to Trikafta. Yeah. Trikafta is just, it works in 90% of the channels. It's just incredible. It's the nearest thing to a cure. I mean, I know someone that started on it on a trial basis, and their lung function was in the 30s, and their lung function is now in the 70s. So, I mean, there are endless possibilities.
That's spectacular. That's spectacular.
Oh, it's phenomenal. Yeah. I mean, it was so good in the trials that the FDA fast-tracked the approval in America by 5-6 months. I mean, it shouldn't even be approved yet. It shouldn't have been approved until the new year, but they approved it early.
And what's the situation here then and the rest of Europe?
It's gone for EMA approval. It will be probably second quarter next year when it's available. And then by the time it's rolled out, it'll probably be the end of the year by the time everyone is on it. But it can't come quick enough now.
Right.
It really can't, but it's here.
Sean, great to hear your voice.
Thanks for it.
And I'm in awe of you. I know you haven't done anything yet, but even the fact that you've offered.
Yes.
And mind yourself. And Gillian, mind yourself. And
thanks.
We'll talk to you in the new year.
Okay.
Thanks a million.
Bye now.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye. Right, thanks. Bye.
Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
RTE.ie. Now, you've been listening to me boring you about the benefits of running for a long time, so I'm going to take a step back and let somebody else bore you. David Gillick. Good afternoon, David.
Good afternoon, right?
You're not going to bore them, but there's a new research from Parkrun in partnership with VHI.
Yeah.
And it has sort of confirmed what we all know.
Yeah, it has. Like you've been harping on, I've been harping on. A lot of people are aware that, you know, the benefits of exercise and just getting out there. And I think this research in conjunction with VHI and the Park Run, you know, it just highlights and I suppose backs what we all know, that getting out, running, exercising is just good for our physical well-being, our mental well-being, our overall fitness, and also our happiness. And another little interesting stat from the research was that not only participating in a park run, but even volunteering at a park run. So getting involved in that community which is set up, and you've seen park runs around the country, there is a sense of community, volunteerism, people giving up their time, just getting involved. And I think this research just highlights the benefits across, like I said, your physical and your mental, and just that community and being involved in something like that as well is phenomenal.
Because you're getting social interaction as well, because the cup of tea and the scone are a big part of it in a lot of them.
Yeah, a lot of them, yeah. And you'll see that, like, from individual, that community where they finish up the park run and then there's obviously a cafe or something like that around. They go and have a cup of tea. Even people bring it along with them. I've been very fortunate with VHI to do road shows over the last year. We've gone to 9 places, and last year then, before that, it was another 9, and I've seen it all over the country, and it's brilliant. I think, you know, when I look at the recent kind of months for me, Temple Moor and Tipperary was a great park run. Monaghan, there's so many good ones, and we come along and we support what people are trying to do there. We make it fun. We have teas and coffees, and you know, I'm there to do a bit of a warm up, and we give them rewards. We have a yoga teacher and stuff like that, and it's that sort of environment. And what it's really pleasing for me is that it's open for everyone. And I think even yesterday, there was a park run record by Sean Tobin over in
Malachi. Would have been Saturday, would it?
Sorry, Saturday. Yes. Saturday, yeah. He ran, what did he run?
14 minutes.
14:19.
Is that very fast? Yeah.
That's very fast. Yeah. In Malahide, which isn't the fastest course. But then you have the other side of it as well. And even my local one in Marley, we had 600 people there on Saturday, including my wife. She'll probably hate me for saying that now, but she got around it. But it's that broad kind of range.
Yeah, and I'm assuming that everyone knows what park runs are, and we can't assume that. So it's 9:30 in locations around the country. A lot of them are parks. That's where it gets the name from. And it's free of charge.
Free of charge is 117.
And it's 5K. And 117 now, is it?
17 total park runs.
Does that include junior runs?
That includes junior runs. So yeah. I think there's about 90-odd adult park runs, the 5K, and then obviously you've got the junior park runs on the Sunday morning. So, yeah, it's free. And yeah. that's the thing. All you need to do is register, get your little barcode. And the great thing about that is it just measures how many you're doing and obviously your times and puts you in categories. But the time is irrelevant. It's you're against yourself, you know, and you can walk it, run it. And it's a great thing to be involved in, you know. And like I said myself, even now, with Charlotte did it the last 2 weeks. So I've had to kind of take a step back and curve the priority, you know.
I'm trying to sell it to people. What a way to start off your weekend as well, because you get you up out of bed on a Saturday morning.
Yeah.
And then by 10:30, you've done... You know, you've done your 5K.
Yeah, and look,
set up for the day.
I'll be honest with you. Like, the reason, I suppose, like, it's great for me to be involved with Parkrun and VHI, but on a personal note, like, I went through my own journey when I retired from full-time athletics, professional athletics, whatever you want to call it, and I struggled. I didn't really know whether I was coming or going. I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life, and I knew about the Parkrun, but at this stage in my life, I hated athletics. After an intense career, I hated it. And I always remember, I'll do my Parkrun. I'll go to Marley Park and I'll do it. Now, I grew up around Marley Park. My running club, Dundrum South Dublin, started there. I was bound to bump into people. So ego took over. And Friday night would come around and be like, oh, no, I won't do it. I won't do it. Eventually, I kicked the ego to touch and I said, right, I'll go up and do it. So I drove up, parked the car, and I walked into the field. And I'll never forget it, because the first fella to come up to me recognised me and he said, ah, David, great to see you. You should win this. And I remember thinking, oh. And that's what people kind of thought.
Exactly what you didn't want to hear.
Exactly. But the fact that people thought I was an athlete, that I've run every event from, like, you know, 400, which was my event, all the way up to a marathon, I'd never ran more than 400 metres. Because I was very specialised. So 5K was like a different sport to me. But I ran it.
How'd you do?
Well, I tell you, I took off like a lunatic. You swear I robbed the local shop. I was gone. Took off. And then I was blown chunks by about 2K. And then this guy passed me. His name is Neil. And he runs sub 20, pushing two kids around Marley Park.
Right.
He passed me. Everyone else passed me. But I finished it. And, you know, I felt a lot better about myself. So everything you mentioned there about kind of physically, mentally, I just... felt I started my Saturday in the best way, and that was kind of the start of it for me.
Because we've discussed this before, you were in a bad place, weren't you?
Yeah, I suppose I was, like, in terms of my own athletic career, I thought I'd go to the Beijing Olympics, I'd go on to London, and then I'd go to Rio, and then I'd retire. I made one. You know, I got badly injured in 2011, and that had a knock-on effect for 2012, and I retired in 2013. And I think, you know, I just had a very intense career, and I didn't really have an exit plan. I didn't have that kind of mapped out. And then I got badly injured, and that was it. So suddenly I woke up, and I couldn't really compete at that level again. My body kept breaking down, and you lose financial support, you lose sponsors, funding, all that. And you're kind of looking down... where are you going to do next?
Yeah. And you were defined, you defined yourself as an athlete.
Yeah, and that was one big area kind of in terms of my mental health. All my confidence, all my self-esteem, self-worth came from my athletics. Like, that was my river of confidence, and that dried up. So again, when you're kind of taking a holistic approach to your life, where do you get your confidence, your self-belief from? Mine was just from that one element of my life, my athletics. And then when that was done, you're kind of scratching your head going, well, what am I good at? Who am I? What goal do I have? What purpose? And, you know, that's where, you know, I look at Parkrun now, and it got me back running, got me back enjoying my running. It wasn't about competing, winning times. It was literally just getting up to the park on a Saturday morning and getting around.
Yeah. In fresh air.
And getting fresh air, yeah.
So you're doing a lot, obviously, it's not sports commentary, it's sports interviewing.
Yeah, it's kind of, it's crazy how life, you know, what life throws up. But I obviously covered with RTE, did a bit of London Olympics, then I was over in Rio for the Rio Olympics. And obviously now, coming around to Tokyo next year, I plan on heading out there with the team in RTE. And in between that, yeah, I've been kind of doing a good bit of... interviewing, post-race interviews in terms of athletics, doing a bit with Game On and the various kind of radio and TV shows. Mm. But obviously just came back from Doha there recently enough. The World Championships were on over there, and we had great success with Kieran McGean, Brendan Boyce.
We had her in, yeah. We had
And
what was Doha like? Because I was watching it. It was like a big stage show. They had a big light show, didn't they?
It was. And that was actually, I have to be honest, from... a stadium environment and being a spectator, it was brilliant because it broke it up a little bit. It kind of livened things up a little bit, and the light kind of show was brilliant, and the music and stuff like that. But Doha in itself, it wasn't a very spectator-friendly venue. Obviously, from, like, even getting spectators into the stadium, it was very poor. Like, you know, the attendances were really...
Athletics isn't big over there, obviously.
It's not, and I think that's it's a shame from the IAAF, or World Athletics, as I call it now, because you need to know your fan base and structure around, you know, what people want. And they didn't do that. And I think, you know...
It's all about the money, though, isn't it?
It is all about the money, yeah. And I think, you know, to be fair with IAAF, Seb Coe, who's the head of it now, this was done in the previous regime. And as we know, there's a lot of issues around that. But it was disappointing because it's the pinnacle of our sport. It's where the sport really sells itself. And it just wasn't there, even though on the track, the championships were brilliant. There was great competition. And even within the stadium, it was air conditioned. It was 24, 25 degrees. It was perfect conditions. It was outside of the stadium that conditions were relentless in terms of the marathon, the walk. And even Brenda Boyce had a remarkable sixth place in conditions I honestly can only...
In the 50-kilometre walk.
50K walk. Yeah, he's out there for over 4 hours.
And because it's getting close to an Olympic Games, there was a lot of competition there and people were laying down markers, weren't they?
Yeah, it's a pre-Olympic year. So again, a lot of athletes want to lay down that marker, put themselves in a position where, you know, they're the ones to be kind of shot at going into next year. And it is a crucial year in an athlete's development with the Olympics coming around the corner.
Could we win a medal next year in athletics?
No, I don't think so.
Right, yeah, okay. Yeah.
And that's not been defeated, you know, but like, you got to kind of know your limits. I don't think, can we win? Okay, our best shot of a medal would be, I would say, maybe Brendan Boyce in the 50K walk.
Right.
I think at sixth place this year, the type of character he is, and obviously conditions, he responded very well to conditions and worked that into his regime and his planning. On the track, I think Kieran McGean making a final, Tom Barr making a final would be brilliant.
We were talking to Kieran McGeehan about looking up at the time of the girl who won. Can't remember her name.
Sifan Hassan.
Yeah. And been shocked that it was that fast.
I watched it. I was there. And Hassan, obviously, she won the 10K earlier in the week. So she went from 10K down to 1500, which again, for people who might be unfamiliar with athletics, that's like going from like rugby into soccer and been excelling at both. You know, it's phenomenal. Kira was very surprised at that time that she ran. It was one of the fastest races in the history of the World Athletics, all the way down to like all the positions with PB's national record. From an athlete's perspective, it's a race you want to be in because you'd be dragged around as Kira was to a personal best.
Yes.
But obviously there is kind of some issues around Hassan and her coach Salazar, etc. But take none away from Kira, like to get to a world final is incredible.
Brilliant, hard. Yeah. You know, so really, no medals next year.
Yeah.
Okay. Can I start to run now? I'm 59, never ran, work as a female dairy farmer, but no regular fitness program.
Of course you can, yeah. And like, I think the best way about that is like something like the park run, where you can run, you can walk, you can run, you can walk, or even just get out and start walking and try and walk a little bit faster, you know. So don't kind of go hell for leather straight off the bat, you know, work it into maybe if you have a watch, walk fast for a minute, relax for a minute, walk fast for a minute. So build your kind of general fitness up nice and slowly.
And if you're a dairy farmer, you're probably sort of have a level of fitness anyway.
You'll be active. You're on your feet, I'd imagine, over the course of the day.
I'd love to start running again since stopped a few years ago as I couldn't get the breathing correct and my mouth would get very dry.
Yeah, a lot of people have issues around...
Do they? Right.
Around breathing, because again, if you're not fit, you know, you're going to be breathing very, very, very harsh and heavy and very regular. So again, it starts small and build. Don't try and be a hero overnight. So go out and kind of go for your walks, little jogs here and there, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, build it up gradually.
Right. I joined a Fit for Life group with Lusk AC in September. I hated running and never felt I could do it. I couldn't run to save my life. I did my first park run last Saturday week in Donabate, to my amazement. So to everyone out there, give it a try. That's Nuala.
Yeah, fair play to Nuala. That's what we want to hear. But she's dead right. You know, people are always amazed that when you get yourself into an environment where, like I said, in Marley there was nearly 600 people on a cold November morning. But when you're there, it's that accountability. Oh, I've got to show up. Or you recognise someone, try and beat that person. But it's just getting in. And it's amazing the motivation that and the determination of people and getting around. It's brilliant.
I'm a speed walker. I do the park run in Cabinteely. I've done 17 so far and hope to have 20 done by Christmas. It's a wonderful thing to do and it's entirely free.
Yeah, free.
The volunteers are amazing and well done to them all. I have volunteered 3 times so far. That's Trish. And we were around the country there. We were in Limerick and Cork and Kilcock and back in Dublin there out in St. Anne's Park in Raheny.
That's fast out in St. Anne's now. Where's your, do you have a PB, Ray?
I never really know. I just run for the fun of it.
Good. Yeah, that's what we like to hear. Yeah.
Yeah. Should I pay more attention to how fast
that's
I run?
It's totally up to yourself. Like, I kind of find myself is like, you're just getting out. And I suppose coming from my specialised background.
Yeah, but it's all about. I can understand why you would have
PBs.
But
it's not now, I'll be honest. I just kind of, I want to run it and I want to get around and feel good. That's simply.
Yeah, I used to have one of those running watches, but I threw it out. It was taken away from the enjoyment of the whole thing.
A lot of people like that. A lot of people are getting fixated on steps and heart rates and stuff like that. Sometimes get rid of the watch and just run.
Just run. That's what I do, yeah. So Park runs every Saturday morning, 9:30. Over 100 around the country. So over there's 100. No excuses now. No excuses.
And it's free. It's free. So but also what's actually funny, Ray, is you get Park run tourists. So they're travelling around the country.
Yes.
They're going through the alphabet. So they're starting with, one begins with A and they're trying to get the whole way through.
See,
so
people are even leaving the country and traveling to
Yeah, well, one of my favourite ones, I'll just finish on this, was down in Inch in Kerry. Unbelievable.
Inch Beach,
in Strand. Yeah, it was gorgeous. And remarkably, there was a good few people from England.
Right.
And they'd come over because I think there was a flight into Kerry from Luton or somewhere like that. And they'd all come over because that got I on the alphabet.
There you go. I ran 5K in an inch. There you go. David, thank you very much. David is the VHI ambassador for Park Run. 5155 on RayRT.ie.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Conor Pope joins us in studio on this Monday afternoon, as he does most Mondays.
How are you, Ray?
Conor.
How are you getting on?
Good to talk to you again.
Good to be here.
Were you up against David Gillick in MasterChef?
MasterChef, David Gillick whooped me.
Yes.
Yeah. No, he won MasterChef. I didn't win MasterChef.
He beat you in a 400 metre run around the place.
He actually approached it in a very, very methodical, athletic minded way. And he did training before the competition. I did no training before the competition. In fact, I wasn't really aware what the competition was until I entered it. And then I was like, what have I done? Oh, God. So I lasted 5 weeks. 5 weeks, Ray. I was in the semi-finals of MasterChef.
That's on your CV now.
Yeah, and I still sometimes like wake up in the dead of night with cold sweats because I put too much lavender in my dessert on the last day and that caused me to get sent home.
Was it ice cream? Yeah.
No,
lavender and ice cream,
Prosecco,
no.
Prosecco poached pears with lavender served on some kind of tweedle.
Pure posh.
Oh, I tell you.
Now, PriceWatch at RTE.ie if you want Connor to help you out with any consumer issues. We'll get down to this then. Dear Connor, I have a repeat prescription and every month I get a reminder from Boots to tell me to come in and collect it. Recently, I got a text message from the same number telling me I had won a prize and to follow a link to claim it. When I followed the link, it took me to a page offering me a free iPhone. I'm pretty sure it was a scam, but how did those behind it get access to the Boots number and how are they able to target vulnerable people like me?
You know, this is quite common and it's been very common in recent months. And now the person sent me a screen grab of the messages, and sandwiched between this alert telling them that they'd come second or third in a raffle were two messages, one on either side saying, you know, your prescription is ready. Next one, your prescription is ready. And then there was this message saying that you've won a raffle or second prize in a raffle. So come follow this link and you'll collect your prize. And the fact that it was sandwiched between the two legitimate text messages, I think is kind of alarming, as it lends the message an authenticity that it might have lacked. Let's say if I'd got it, because if I'd suddenly got a random message from Boots telling me that I'd won a prize, I'd be incredibly suspicious because Boots shouldn't have my telephone number and they should. I have had no contact with Boots in that kind of form. So I would be naturally suspicious. But if you were a regular and routine customer of Boots, you would be concerned. Now, what I have to say from the office, it is a scam. And when I got in touch with Boots, they sent me a statement. So what their statement said was, we've been made aware of the fraudulent text message which claims to be from Boots. Boots does not hold monthly draws. If you receive any such message, delete it straight away. Please do not click on the links. Scammers can manipulate SMS tags to identify themselves as Boots so that their fraudulent messages go into the same Boots SMS thread on your phone. Always immediately delete any messages which you suspect of being fraudulent. Now, it's not that Boots database was compromised. It's not that people had all of the Boots customers' mobile phone numbers or anything like that. They were able to just manipulate the numbers so that the text message that they were able to send out and bombard thousands of people with looked like it had come from Boots. So you know the way all your messages now, your text messages, they tend to be threaded. So if you send me 5 text messages, they'll all be like messages from Ray Darcy on my phone. It's the same principle here. And it's not just Boots.
So it's not from the same phone number as our listener suggested.
No, but it just looks like it's from the same phone number.
Right.
And in the same way that, you know, it has impacted the likes of all of the big retailers, Lidl have been affected, Tesco have been affected, mobile phone operators, banks. So you get this text message and it says, hi, you know, we've got a message from your bank, you've won a prize, you follow the link and, you know, you can be snookered. Mm-hmm. So the question then is, what happens when you follow the link and how does the scam operate? Now, when you follow the hyperlink, typically it will take you to a scam website which will ask for some personal information. Sometimes it'll ask for your bank details, and then sometimes it'll request a small fee so that the prize that you've won can be delivered to your house. And the prize might be really attractive, like a brand new iPhone. And they'll say, can we get 20 euros and we'll deliver this brand new free iPhone to you. And if you're caught unawares and if you're unfamiliar with the existence of the scam, you can be cut out. And the way these people operate is they send out 1,000 or 10,000 or 50,000 of these text messages. And all they need is a tiny percentage of the people to fall.
Because if they send it to you or me, we would know it was a scam because we don't.
Exactly.
Or do they only send them to people who have an account of Boots?
No, they might blanket send messages to hundreds of people. And, yes. You know, you might get a message from a retailer that you've never shopped in. And you're going, well, clearly that's not for me. But even still, you might be convinced by it. And as I say, because a lot of the time the scam artists, they're not, you know, you're not getting a message from the daughter of a sub-Saharan prince with a suitcase full of blood diamonds offering to give you 8 billion euros. They're just asking you for a small amount of money to give you a large prize. So a lot of people are thinking, oh, it's only 20 euros. What's the worst that can happen? The worst that can happen is that they will have your financial details. And the second worst thing that happens is that you lose your 20 euros because you're not getting any prize. And, you know, I got this problem like last couple of weeks. And since then, several other people have contacted me with the same kinds of text messages from different retailers. So it is, and it's likely to become more prevalent and more problematic as we come close to Christmas. In fact, this morning, the Gardaí and this bank initiative called FraudSmart issued an alert, and they issued a warning to people that in the weeks ahead, there's going to be more scams and people need to be vigilant. And among the scams that are highlighted, now we've talked about scams on the show on many occasions, but the ones they're talking about are, you know, the text message, email or telephone scams, which sees a text message coming from your bank saying, can you send us your financial details, your account is being compromised or something like that. So that's one that's happening. Another one is they have this advanced fee fraud, which sees a lot of people are fairly stuck and for money when it comes to Christmas, because obviously we all know that, you know, it's an expensive time of year for people, and there's an awful lot of websites that are offering loans online, and they target people who are in a financially vulnerable position, and they say pre-approved loans, you can get your loan approved in less than 10 minutes. So you send them off some details, they come back to you with an email straight away saying your loan has been approved and you need to pay a small fee in advance. And then we will forward you the loan. It might be 1,000 euros, might be 2,000 euros. An awful lot of people are so desperate to get that 1,000 euros or to get that 2,000 euros that they'll pay the 20 euros or the 40 euros as a kind of administrative fee. But of course, those accounts don't exist. And the other scam that the Gardaí highlighted today, and it's a really horrible one, and it actually does catch people out, it's called the invoice redirect scam.
I heard about this over the weekend.
And the way this one operates is you might be working for a small company and you get a phone call from somebody purporting to be a company that you do business with. And they say, just to let you know that we've changed our bank account. Oh, so this is our new bank account. Don't want any money now. We'll just update your records that this is the new account. So then a month passes and you get an invoice from that particular company. So you think, oh yeah, I've got the new bank details here. So you send you get a legitimate invoice and just send it to a dodgy account.
Clever.
And when you do that, typically it can be very hard to get the money back. Now, there have been big examples of that in this country. Big operations have been cut out by this scam because it's just so sneaky. But the bottom line is that people just need to be more vigilant. And if you ever get an email or a text message promising you something, always ask the question, is this true? And 99.99999, in fact, 100% of the time, the answer is always going to be no.
And your old adage, you know, the one about if it's...
seems too good to be true, it is too good to be true. But having said that, there was another separate survey published by Ulster Bank today, and it was called, you know, they conducted this Black Friday fraud survey, and it showed that people, like 76% of people, said they had taken all the necessary precautions to shop safely online. So 3/4 of us think, we'll be grand when it comes to shopping online. Nearly 1/4 admitted they'd take a chance on clicking a link if it promised them a great deal. So they'd follow the link if it promised them a great deal. And then 1 in 10 people who shop online claim to have shared their online banking PIN or password with somebody else, which I just think is kind of foolish, because if you do that, you're opening yourself up to be compromised. And if you're the victim of a scam where the bank is to blame, the bank covers the cost. But if you give away your bank details to somebody, or if you give them your PIN and they use that to access your account, it's all on you. You've got no comeback.
And the fraudsters, they always seem to be one step ahead of the rest of us in that they find loopholes in the technology and the security systems
they
that
do.
People have.
And there was a great one I got. I actually wrote about it in the Irish Times last year. It was a fantastic scam. And out of the blue, I got an email from some guy and he said, OK, Connor, let's cut to the chase. I know this is your password. And he gave me a password that I thought I was the only person in the world who knew it. He gave me a password that I'd been using for donkey's years for a particular account. I can't even remember what it was. And he said, I know your password. I put some dodgy software on your laptop and I have found you doing bold things. Unless you give me 800 euros in Bitcoin, I'm going to release this video of you doing bold things to the whole world. And I initially was kind of thinking, A, if you had a webcam on my laptop, you'd have seen me just playing fantasy football and surfing Twitter mindlessly. It would have been really boring. And B, I have no idea how to get Bitcoin. But for about 5 seconds, I was like, how does this guy know my password? Yeah. And then I Googled.
How did he?
There'd been a data breach in LinkedIn 5 years ago. And all they'd got, these scammers, was 10 million passwords. So they just had the passwords and the email addresses of people. So then they just sent out 10 million.
But it's
kind of a social engineering scam. And because they had that one snippet of information that I thought was private, I could have been convinced to give them more money, in which case I would have been snookered. But luckily, as I say, I was
clear conscience.
Clear conscience and no idea how to get Bitcoin.
Right. Got a text from Lidl, similar to the Boots message. I didn't reply as I got a whiff of a rat.
Now, the Lidl and Lidl again have issued a statement on that. And they said, we're not having raffles. And unless you actually, and this is the thing, unless you actually have entered a raffle with Lidl,
yes,
you're not going to win a raffle with Lidl. In the same way that if you didn't enter a raffle with Boots, you're not going to win a raffle. I mean, how many times have we won the Spanish lottery? And the Spanish lottery one actually tends to operate in the old traditional snail mail. So there was times when you get envelopes.
People want to believe, as you said, people are going through tough
thing.
Times
they
and they want to
know
believe.
That the scam artists know that there's always going to be vulnerable people out there, and the vulnerable people are more susceptible to the scams because frankly they're desperate.
Be careful out there. Pricewatch@rte.ie if you want Connor to grapple with any of your consumer issues. We'll talk to you next Monday. Thanks very much, Connor Pope. Anish now the Fifth Skelton and Oakdale and Michael Fianna. Andrew, are you excited about tonight's game?
Excited, nervous, and all of the spectrum of emotions that sort of range between excitement and fear, I suppose.
And just remind us, if we win, we go straight through to the European Championship.
Yeah.
If we draw, what happens?
If we draw, Denmark goes straight through to the European Championships, but we will be guaranteed, whatever happens tonight, we are guaranteed a playoff.
Uh-huh.
So there is a back door. We're guaranteed a back door to get into the Euros, but it would be better, wouldn't it, just to do it tonight and then we can all relax.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
But that's not the way this team does it traditionally.
What do you think?
I am nervous, but in all fairness, apart from the 5-1 defeat a couple of years ago, we have been extremely, extremely close. I was looking down through, I think in the overall record, we played Denmark, I think we played them, is it 17 times, and we won 5, lost 4. But in the last couple of years, it's been nil all draw, nil all, 1-1.
Right.
So 1-5 is the one at the Aviva Stadium we'll all remember. But other than that, the teams have been fairly closely matched. And I am hopeful today, but slightly nervous, slightly nervous.
Okay. Paul McGrath was tweeting earlier on. This is what he says.
I'd like to say all the best to the lads tonight. We're off up to Dublin to see them. Hope making the lads do us proud. And I think it's going to be about 3-1 to the Republic of Ireland. Get them beaten. Take care, lads. Goodbye.
3-1, he's predicting.
Listen, we'll take that. We'll take
right,
we'll take
okay.
1-0. We'll take a half a goal to nil.
Right.
It shows you how much these teams have played, that Tony O'Donoghue, our colleague, and the Danish manager have developed a little bit of a rapport at this point. Probably more so than Tony was able to develop with the previous Republic of Ireland manager. But let me just play the end of the interview today, if you have time, Ray,
go
for
ahead,
this.
Yeah,
it's a bit of crack. It's a bit of crack. Hold on.
We expect the Irish to come at us, and we have to do the same, because that can give us space. space, possibility to attack them. They are more difficult when they are deep, you know, where they defend well and they work hard, you know. So, I think it will be an interesting game.
I think it'll be a boring game.
Okay, thank you very much. That's a statement. Get that on tape.
We did get it in tape, so I thought you'd enjoy that.
That's great. Yeah. Andrew, thanks very much.
Thanks,
enjoy the game.
Bye, you
bye,
too.
Bye-bye. Now, Martin Kelleher-Peterson is one of the 2,500 Danish fans who are in Dublin for the match tonight. He's on the line now. Good afternoon, Martin.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, good to talk to you. Welcome to Dublin. You're a regular here because you're married to an Irish woman.
I am, yeah.
What's her name?
I am. Her name is Siobhan.
Yeah. How did you meet?
Well, we met on the festival in Roskilde in Denmark, the music festival.
Aha. And Siobhan moved over to live with you?
She already lived in Denmark. She's been over for a while. Her brother as well, who's here for the game as well.
Okay. Now, there's a Danish fan tradition when it comes to away games. Tell us about that.
Well, what we've been doing here the last few away games is that we go on a march. So today we'll have the march here beginning on Temple Bar and then walking. I think we'll actually pass through a couple of places where the Irish fans would be as well, as the Beggar's Bush and so on. Yeah. So that's a good tradition. A fan bar, that was up in Diocese Garden this time around, and then a march.
A march, okay. And what reaction do you get? Have you been on one of these marches before?
We have, yeah. Yeah, we have. And it's always good crack, as you would say. the locals welcome us.
Yeah, yeah. And is Siobhan back in Denmark? She is.
No, she's here.
Oh, she's with you.
On
okay,
the far
all right.
side of the stadium for
okay.
me. Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
No. Right, okay. So, what's your prediction?
Come again?
What's your prediction for tonight's game?
Oh, it's a tough one. See, we can do with a draw, and of course, you have to go out on attack. And last time you attacked, we all know how that ended. So
5-1. Yeah,
maybe.
Thanks.
Yeah, okay. It will be. Maybe it'll be 1-3, something like that.
Okay, to you.
That's the one first.
Okay,
yeah.
Right. Let's hope your prediction doesn't come true. Martin Kelleher-Peterson, enjoy the game. Thank you.
Thank you, you too.
Bye. Now, our next guests have sold 6 million books worldwide. They've just returned from Route 66 on their motorbikes. Dave Myers and Si King have lost 7 stone between them. Yes, of course, I'm talking about the Hairy Bikers.
Oh, it's a great
there
day.
You go.
Really,
that's good walk on music.
It is. Whoa.
Rainbow, since you've been gone. Si and Dave, good to talk to you again. It's our annual date. I love this new book.
And Thanks, Ray.
We'll explain the music in a few minutes' time. Over 100 delicious new favourites, from terrific tray bakes to roasting in tin treats. One Pot Wonders is the name of it.
Yes.
And people are going to love this because people live busy lives. So what was the inspiration for it, Si?
Well, exactly that, actually, that everybody is, you know, it's a symptom of the modern world, Ray, that everybody has is pushed for time. And what we wanted to do was create a cookbook where all the ingredients benefit from being relatively quickly cooked in one pot, and that benefited from all being in that pot together. So that's what it is, really. And it's also about the community of food, about everybody sat together down at the table, sitting, digging in and having a crack on. You know, that's what it's about.
Yeah. Placing the pot in the middle of the table and people helping themselves.
There's nothing better, is it?
No.
There's nothing better.
And of course, it's all about complementary flavours, Dave, isn't it?
Yeah, well, we originally had the ideas for this book. We were on tour last year. And for 100 recipes, we reckon we need 200 one-line ideas about what recipes we want to create. So we had those 200 ideas and we whittled it down to 100, but it's got to be tasty. And as you say, the flavours need to complement one another. There's nothing freaky, you know, I mean, like looking at the sausage and bean supper. Sausage and beans have been bedmates for years.
Bit like me and you, mate.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
We're not bedmates, obviously, but you know
who's sausage and who's beans.
No.
But something like that, it's simple, it's great food for the family, but it does work, and there's butternut squash in there as well instead of the potatoes. But, you know, we'd like to think that the clever recipes are tasty. Sai says, though, they do benefit by being done in one pot. But we set ourselves, you have a chopping board, a knife, a bowl, and a cooking vessel, be it a wok or a tray, and you've got supper for the whole family. You know, tasty suppers that hopefully people will cook time and time again.
And you don't have as much washing up at the end of it.
Which is perfect, isn't it? I mean, you know, the last thing that you want to do is be faced with a sink full of dishes.
At the end of it all.
Or that moment where you try, where you go, oh, flipping Nora. Or you're just about to put them in the dishwasher and you've just realised that you haven't unloaded the dishwasher from the last time. That's irritating.
And there's a bang of fish off it.
Yeah.
Aye, aye, aye. Yeah.
And it goes right through from breakfast to supper to dessert.
Mm.
There's everything in there.
Everything's possible. Soups are a particularly favourite chapter of mine. I think there's some soups and salads in there as well, which again are a one pot. But say we try to think, you know, a bit clever. There was a soup we had years ago when we're filming Vacation. And in Austria, it's one of their national... It's a garlic soup. Now, if you like garlic... brilliant. If you don't like garlic, leave that one out. But we've managed to get the recipe just right. Sometimes you taste it, it takes a lot of work. But this one, it's minimal ingredients. It's a white soup and absolutely love it. And for the winter months, it's great, you know.
I'm going to try that, but you need the cooperation of your partner and all your neighbours, I'd say.
No, you need that for the sausage and bean supper.
Yes, yes.
And the kedrigi. Smoked fish and egg is going to do it to you as well.
That'll do it every time. But at least they'll have an aroma, an aromatic tinge to it all.
And they always go together, smoked fish and egg. That's a well-tested pairing.
You're right, Ray. It's just one of those things, isn't it? It's just, you know, they just sit together really well.
Yeah, it's like with the tray bakes. You've got to kind of build your tray from the bottom upwards. So say you've got your carbohydrate, you put that on the bottom so all the flavours are going to cook down. And then the protein parts will be on the top so that all the juices go there. It gets crispy on the top. And sometimes you put, say, some fresh herbs near the end. You know, there's like a little bit of program of events for feeding your tin or receptacle. But if you follow the instructions, they will work sort of fabulously well.
And you're very strict on the one pot part of it, because when it comes to the shepherd's pie, or is it cottage pie, you're not gonna boil your potatoes beforehand. What have you done instead?
No, it makes a mockery of the one pot wonder, doesn't it?
Yeah. So how do you get around that one then?
It's going back to the Lancashire hot pot.
Yes,
you know, like to me, when I was a kid, the Lancashire hot pot, it was the most perfect one pot wonder. Mm. Like the potatoes in the bottom. They cook in the stock, so it's kind of like a Boulanger potatoes. The potatoes on the top, they're the favourites. They go crispy, but the potatoes provide like a pressure cooker for the lamb, so you get all the flavour. You put black pudding in, but this in the shepherd's pie, you know, you put your potatoes. If you use a mandolin, it's great, and they like hot pot potatoes on the top, one layer at a time. Over the meat sauce, season each layer with salt and pepper, but also we put some cheese on as well.
Nice.
So there again, the potatoes are going to steam, the lowest ones, and cook in the meat and the gravy and the juices and the stock. So again, it's spot on, and with a bit of melted cheese. So that's how we get around doing them in a one pot.
I'm looking at your minty lamb steaks. I want to dive into that now. That's probably the most attractive picture in the book.
I think that's a good dish for spring, because you've got the baby new potatoes and all the things. There's the green veg that you associate with lamb. And I think we wrote that because, again, it's for today's real life. Every supermarket now sells lamb steaks. Mm. So you don't have to buy a leg and lamb and chop your own up. It's convenient. It's prepared. And again, that is a really simple, straightforward tray bake to make.
It looks
for
delicious.
Me, that'd be something
it
for
looks
the spring.
Delicious. Yeah.
Yeah.
How was the whole keeping the weight off going for the 2E?
It was a disaster in America, right?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Like Frank, yes.
So their portions are twice the size of ours.
aren't they?
Well, it's but it's also yes, it is. But it's also you know you're in receipt of food that you wouldn't ordinarily eat because there was no love and care and attention given to it in the majority of places. I mean, there is a deep seam of cuisine in the U.S. that is fantastic. It's beautiful produce. Carefully produced and beautifully cared for and applied with, you know, copious lashings of love and care. But the majority of it on a daily basis in some of the hotels and motels that we were staying in was truly appalling.
So how'd you get around it then?
Well, we cooked our food.
Oh, you cooked your own food?
Well, we did a bit, and also you just kind of pick your way through. If there's an apple, you'll eat it. You know, it was that mad.
Also, we were vegetarians on the crew, and that was quite hard to cater
for.
Oh, it was
impossible for
you know, I mean, to keep the vegetarian members, we were looking for kind of fast food joints at lunchtime that they could actually eat anything. Mm. This is in the Midwest. It was awful. When we got to New Mexico, it got much more interesting on the food front.
Yeah, it was much better.
But most of the food, like the recipes that we picked up, they were from the migrant communities there, which have been very successful in America. But it's funny, it's the volume of food and the reliance on like really cheap carbohydrates, you know, the...
not good.
Yeah,
there's a guy,
I've lost it.
There's a guy,
lost it since.
Finn Bar Fury. He's a famous Irish folk singer banjo player, yeah. He talks about the same problem that you had when he went on the road. So he brought a slow cooker with him and he used to make curries and everything in the hotel room.
Yeah, I know, but it's true because when you tour as extensively as Finbar, it's really difficult.
You need to take control, don't you?
Well, you have to, because otherwise, fundamentally, you just won't. You'll end up not being very well and constantly hungry.
Yeah.
So the food wasn't. The food was. It was. Look, it was interesting, and it was interesting to see, but not particularly great to eat.
And what about the hash laced food that you encountered?
Now that was great.
Oh, that was
fair.
Yes.
Great.
Foray into marijuana gastronomy. That really is a thing. In Hollywood at the moment, it's a gimmick, I think, but it was part of, you know, they're treating it very seriously with the legalized marijuana. And I hasten to add that none of the marijuana was bought at the license pays expense.
We had to flame and do it.
Right.
We bought it.
And everything, savory, hash browns, the whole lot, they're all laced with marijuana.
Well, no, it's much cleverer than that, wasn't it, Kingy?
Yeah, it was. It was. There's a particular cuisine that lends itself. So what you'd have is you'd have Michelin star chefs who would be that you can hire, that you can bring into your home. They'll cook a Michelin star standard dinner for you, but they'll microdose it with THC,
right,
which is the psychoactive element of cannabis. So it's all appropriately done. It's not about getting completely off your face. It's more like wine, if you like.
Okay.
It's more like drinking a few glasses of wine. It's that level of kind of intoxication, rather than being flat on your flat on your face.
And both he and
I was certainly nearly flat on my face.
flat on my face.
I always make you giggle, but I don't know if it added anything to the food.
Mm. And what about the munchies then? Isn't that a symptom of?
Well, which was great because you were eating it. So as you got through dinner, you're just thinking, oh, I could eat that again.
sort of simultaneous.
Yes, if you do, then you're in real trouble.
Listen, you're touring next year. I can't believe I'm saying this, but Friday 25th of September, you're in Belfast Waterfront, and Saturday 26th September, that's 2020, lads. You're in Dublin
year.
Olympia Theatre, and there's rumours that there might be a second Dublin date there. And the reason I play John with Rainbows since you've been gone is that you have I didn't know that these things still existed, a triple CD compilation.
Yeah, it's great. Well, we're really chuffed to be able to do it. And Atlantic Records, who are the record label behind it, Universal, are the record label behind it. It was great when they approached us, and we just thought, oh, what a lovely thing to do. So yeah, no, it was great.
We said that actually to people still buy compilation albums. Apparently they do. But we've had a rock radio show for 5 years now, and so it's some of our favourite stuff. We put it together and you get a download so you can put it on your little phone for your car and that. Well, it's just good stuff.
And so you were in a band, weren't you?
I still am.
Oh,
I
you still am, right, yeah. Right.
I'm in a band called Little Moscow, and we still gig and we still play together. We've been playing together for 35 years. So,
right. So, yeah. So on, there's a sort of a food-related song on each CD. I spotted them.
Yeah, go on. Yeah, Def Leppard.
Pour some sugar on me. Okay, yeah, right.
Yeah.
American Pie. Yeah. And then you're wondering, what's the third one?
No, it's not that.
Ram Jam.
It's Cherry Pie, Warren.
Oh, Cherry Pie. God, I missed
that. You missed that one.
But that
one,
was
Ray.
Ram Jam, you see.
Ram Jam.
Cherry Pie.
Cherry Pie. Okay, I missed that one.
That's because we're food obsessed, Ray.
Yeah. yeah.
It's by happenstance rather than design.
What a brilliant. So where do you do the rock show?
We do it out of the Bower Studios in Golden Square.
Yeah, it's on Planet Rock on right. Sunday mornings.
Right, brilliant.
We've been doing it for 5 years now.
Okay, so final question then. What's your current comfort food, Si? What's sort of do you like eating at the moment? That's easy.
Oh well, I tell you what I'm just about to do, because I haven't been home for a while. So I'm just about to go and buy some oxtail, because we've got an oxtail stew recipe in that. And I remember when Dave and I were kind of testing the recipes on it. I remember thinking, flipping heck, as soon as I get home, I'm going to cook that. Right. And that's exactly what I'm going to do.
Oxtail stew on the menu.
Oxtail stew on the menu for me.
What about Dave?
Yeah,
Dave?
I've got an obsession with it. It's called Uzbek plov. And it's from Uzbekistan. It is in the book, but what we put so people that can go, I'm not going to cook Uzbek plov. We just put lamb and rice to you. Right, it's a lamb and rice dish, all in one, with lamb neck fillet, onions, carrots, cumin, coriander, stock. But you serve it with big gherkins and pickled green chilies. It's just a brilliant one-pot rice dish.
So lovely.
And I just like saying Uzbek plov.
Yeah, and they're all so inviting. And coming into the dark evenings now and the cold days, you just want a one-pot wonder, don't you?
You do.
You do.
Listen, talk to you next year.
Cheers, Ray. See you then.
Psyching Dave Myers, the Hairy Bikers, One Pot Wonders is in shops now. So too is their 3-CD rock compilation. See you, lads. Bye.
See you.
Bye-bye, bye, Ray. Ta-ra, mate.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Or 515-51. Afternoon, Ray. Love the lads, but have a bone to pick with the Hairy Bikers. I recently bought their slow cooker. Delighted, because it included a recipe book. But, in capitals, the flippin' book contained 6 recipes, only 1 for the slow cooker. Come on, lads. Well, they're gone now. Well, you got the slow cooker. Come on. Come on, you. On David Gillick, full marks for the delightfully common sense advice on running and fitness. Best to you, says another David. And fair play to David Gillick. His honesty is truly inspiring. I used to run regularly up to 3 years ago, but life got in the way. Not anymore. I'm going to give it a try tonight. That's Niamh in Limerick. Good luck with that, Niamh. And a great interview with David. Ree Park Run. Fully agree with his comments on the benefits of park runs. We have several park runs in Galway, including our local one in Knocknacarra, where we have tourist runners and walkers from around the world every Saturday. Regards, Tim in Galway. New volunteers are most welcome. That person. Over 100 park runs now around the country. So as I said, you've no excuse. John says on the Thierry Henry handball, regarding that handball, let's ask ourselves this. If an Irish player scored a similar handball type goal, which qualified us for the World Cup, would we as a nation have said, yes, please, we'll take it, merci beaucoup, or would we have offered a replay? Sobering, says John. Have a think about that. Now, just a reminder, we're in the middle of Stand Up and Be Funny. We're searching for Ireland's newest and funniest comedian. We've already been to Bray, and last week we were in the city limits in Cork. And next week, not this week, we're taking a break from it this week, but next week we're in the Roisin Dubh in Galway. That's Thursday the 28th of November. That's Thursday week. And we'll be witnessing, seeing, enjoying, laughing at our final 6 finalists. And one person will be chosen from that. And they, along with Michael and Sinead and a wild card person, will appear on the TV on December the 7th. So we're going to have 4 finalists. And then one of those people will be crowned Stand Up and Be Funny champion, and they will get a little TV programme made for the RTE player, which is quite a good prize. And €1,000 in cash. That'll all happen on the 7th of December. Oh, which reminds me, also on the 7th of December, we did this last year and it was hugely popular. We'll be surprising people. it's raised Christmas crackers. So if you want to say thank you to somebody who's been particularly good to you this year, or if you are one of those people who never got the toy that you wanted from Santa, or if you want to bring somebody home, anything like that, we're in the market for that sort of surprise type television. Raise Christmas crackers at rte.ie. So if you send us an email with as much information about the person you want to surprise and what you'd like us to do for them, to raisechristmascrackers at rte.ie, and you may be there on the night, December the 7th, and the person you want to say thank you to or surprise. That's it from us today. We're back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Mary Wilson is on the way. Enjoy the rest of your Monday evening.